Hello, listeners, and welcome. 12 Sided Stories presents Otherworld London, an actual play RPG podcast that uses the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu system. We weave macabre Gaslight era tales of terror and suspense for your listening enjoyment. Our games are story driven and rules light. Now, our keeper for Otherworld London, Wes Otis.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Otherworld London Season 3, which is kind of amazing. This is episode 25. First, before we start, I want to say thank you to all our Patreon backers. We really appreciate it. And we're doing a solo game. We do this with all of the players at some point. We have a solo game so we can get to know them. And Abria is joining the cast this year. So we are doing her solo game right now. And I just introduced her kind of, but she's going to introduce herself as well. So Abria.
Hi, I'm Abria Iyengar, and I'm going to be playing Dr. Lisette Powell, London surgeon, MD, MA. Oh no, I said a drug.
Yeah, all the during this time and well into the 20th century, all the German chemists are coming up with stuff that is like literally going to fuck everybody up. LSD.
Yep.
Everything. Like
they're
literally.
So bored.
Yeah, they are. Like, what are we making today? I don't know. I want a person with the. When I look at someone, I want them to have four heads. How do we make that happen?
Heinrich, I made a thing. When you lick it, it makes the walls melt.
Yes.
Do you want to try it? This is not a world war. We're going to keep making weird drugs. Yeah,
exactly. Jesus. You are one of the first students of the first female medical school. Basically, it's an all-women school. Read the name again for me.
Yes. So I studied under Dean Elizabeth Garrett Anderson at the London School of Medicine for Women.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
So Dr. Anderson was actually the first board certified surgeon, trained doctor. And we were saying before we came on that there were probably lots of other women, because I think there was three or four others that were with her when they...
Yeah.
But she's kind of the main driving force. So you studied underneath her. And you're a surgeon as well.
I
the
am.
Great thing about being a doctor is if you see something terrible that's natural, like a, you know, mangled corpse or whatever, you don't have to take a sanity check.
Ooh.
Because you're already...
I see them all the time.
Yeah, you're used to it already.
It's upsetting, but not in a like permanent way.
Right, exactly. So just a quick recap, because most of this doesn't apply so much to your character because your character is working into the game. Mm-hmm. At the end of last season, the ladies were able to stop Mabel from bringing this horrible outer god into our reality.
Yes.
And in doing so, they killed Mabel, and they realized that they're going to have to deal with Sir Nunos and all of these other entities that have popped up in London.
Yeah.
Your character has been out of school for a while now, probably like, I want to say 5 to 8 years.
Yes.
And you have noticed around town that there are these large trees that have burst up in the middle of abandoned houses and things like that, just seemingly overnight, but no one seems to be really bothered by them. So you make a lot of house calls. And, you know, as well as working at the hospital, where do you think in the grand scheme of London, and I don't know how much you know about the layout, but...
very little.
Would you want to be in the thick of it in the East End, or would you gravitate more towards the workhouses, or like what area do you think you'd want to be at?
I think... because she's so focused on sort of being part of this like emerging middle class, mm-hmm. of like people who can and are able to achieve social status via hard work and like this meritocracy. If there's a place in the city that's sort of like up and coming. Yeah.
The factories and the docks and
exactly.
all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
She doesn't necessarily want to be like a charity doctor. Right. Like, I'm going to like help the poor. Like, unfortunately, not really her MO.
Okay.
She wants to be visible and thinks she will find the most success with people who are like the most accepting of her and everything that she's bringing.
Well, and the working class at the docks and at factories and things like that have a lot of accidents and things that need surgeons.
Absolutely.
So that makes a lot of sense. So as you're going throughout your day, this messenger comes up and goes, lady, are you a doctor?
Oh, I am, yes.
I missed a...
Dr. Powell.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You continue. Well,
Dr. Graves, Harold Graves.
Harold, yes.
He requests you come by his lab after you're done with your work out here. And you're in the middle of, the factory district, right?
Yeah.
And you have no idea how this kid found you, but somehow he was able to find you. Yeah. So when you, at your earliest convenience, can you please come by and meet with Mr. Graves?
Not a problem. Thank you. Ooh, what was your name?
Gerald, and yes. Runs off.
Ah, yes, Gerald. I will remember you forever.
Wait a minute, I don't have a last name? I'm dead!
Oh, no.
What am I going to do?
And I think she's between, generally speaking, when she leaves in the morning, she kind of just heads in this direction, knowing that, like, something's going to happen because the wheels of progress roll over the backs of workers. And she's just sort of at a cafe, like, reading the newspaper, absently nibbling on a pencil and just sort of waiting to be heralded. So she was surprised at Gerald's appearance, but like, okay, a thing to do, and sort of gets up and like grabs her bag and her very large coat. She's covered from like neck to fucking heaven, just all the way down.
Right. Yeah. There is no impropriety at all.
Yes, not at all.
And do you have like a schmuck or something that's just like covered in, because you're a surgeon.
Yeah.
Is everything pristine, or do you like have a schmock that's covered in stuff, or how do you do that? Like, you're sitting there drinking, are you to the nines, or does it look like you've worked throughout the day?
What time of day is it?
I would say it's pretty close to the end of the day for you.
Okay.
So.
She has like a pinafore situation that she like kind of like loops around her neck and ties around her waist, and like is buttoned onto her outfit that can cover like the main splash zones.
Okay.
And though she tries her absolute best, she churns through blouses. Just because the sleeves always get dipped in a bit of the human condition.
Vitriol?
Yeah. just an ichor, if you will.
I love that word, ichor.
Right? Yeah, so if it's towards the end of the day, she's at the point where she's rolled up her blouse sleeves, but then has like an undershirt on too, so you still aren't seeing any of her skin.
Right.
Also, I just want to say up top that I am playing a black woman.
Right, and I am sorry, I should have mentioned that.
Oh, no, you're good. There's nothing for you to like mention. She's just, her hair is natural, but like caught up in that same like very like proper updo. Mm-hmm. She's wearing glasses. She wears them all the time. She knows that like she has the little chain for them to like put them away. But at this point, she's more about function and like getting in there. So she just wears her glasses all the time.
Right.
They're always a little soiled. Like, those are the most obvious signs of, like, how long a day she's had.
Because
they get schmutz on them all the time. Because she also uses them, like, in surgery to kind of splash guard. So.
Right. And you you had mentioned when we talked about this character that you're a bit of a germaphobe, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's good to know.
Very upsetting to touch
stuff
with her hands.
Germs are like, they're just starting to talk about like whether or not they should wash their hands.
Right? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So you finish your tea and whatever and your biscuit, and you head over to Harold Graves' place. Now, Harold is a mortician.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he sometimes supplies, though autopsies are legal, schools have some strict controls on them, and like doing any kind of autopsy on a woman is like verboten.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he provides a service that is not necessarily legal,
but crucial.
It's important.
Yes.
He is a skinny, really pale, not just like English pale, like deathly pale kind of guy who's always in his laboratory with very little sunlight. When you walk through the door, you're automatically hit by the smell. This is like really like there's some really strong decay going on. You smell blood. You hear the sounds of flies fighting over some kind of piece of something. There are steps leading down into his main laboratory. And he's got all of these different tables. The tables are wooden. So the blood and bile and whatever else is seeping into the wood.
Oh, no.
And there's a big grate underneath the floor where it all kind of drains down into.
He's height of hygiene.
Right. He's got a, like when you do surgery, you always clean up your stuff. He's got just a bucket with a bunch of instruments thrown in together.
Oh, God bless him.
And he's got on a schmuck like you do, but it's crusty. Like he's got different layers. So this is hell.
Yes.
This is bad for you.
He's such a dear friend, and I do literally feel like Virgil just descending into the ninth level of hell when I see you, Harold, my good friend.
Oh, I'm glad they found you. Detective Wilcox will be out in a second. He's from Scotland Yard and wanted to talk to us about a project for these dearly departed that I'm working on right now. And he kind of puts his arms out as if he's showing you the prize or something at some carnival. And there are four bodies lined up on these tables, all covered. He goes, I need your help because you're a surgeon. And when the Detective Wilcox came over and started speaking to me about what he needs, I thought of you first. Come down here. I want to show you all the stuff.
Your enthusiasm belies how absolutely maddening this is. Thank you. And she's sort of like frozen into this like rictus of like, she's pained by this display and
And to give you an idea, he's a good looking guy, but he's a guy that needs a hamburger. Like he's he's very gaunt and everything. He's like 45, so he's just far enough away. To him, it's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just throw it all together. It's fine.
Oh, God, you've been doing this for far too long.
Yes.
Can we get someone, above game.
Yeah.
Do we know, does anyone here work with him? Like, can I order someone to make a pot of tea? I think she has, like, that very, like, it's semi-maternal instinct to like take care of him, and if she can't, like, I don't think she understands, like, get this boy a hamburger, and it's like,
right,
maybe a cup of tea will make you look less like one of your corpses.
We could say that he has an understudy.
Yeah, okay.
A undertaker understudy. So an undertaker study. Anyway, that bit is now done. We'll just call him James because that's as English as I can get right now.
Yep, I feel you.
So you tell James.
Yes, James, sweet dog, please put on a cup of your strongest tea.
Sure, ma'am. Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Also, I thought we talked about this before.
Well,
you have to be the one to clean up after. This is unacceptable.
I did clean up, ma'am. I went around and got all the...
But that man is a crustacean. He looks like a barnacle covered in
gold. Do you know how
hard
it is to get that off of him? He wears it all the time.
Well, I mean, how you treat your personal time with the illustrious Dr. Graves is on you. But this is unacceptable.
All right, I'll do my best to get it away and get to the washerwomen if I can. But I don't... It's going to be hard. I'm going to have to cut it off of him with something.
Oh, my. You have your work cut out for you. Good luck.
I'll go get tea.
Yes.
Thanks, ma'am.
With some lemon, if you have it. The antiseptic. I feel ill. Coming, Harold. And then she kind of sweeps into the room. She, like, grabs her dress. She's normally very modest.
Right.
And doesn't want to distract from the good work that she
does.
Right. By any part of her body, but she is hiking her skirts up.
God forbid it touches the ground.
If it touches, I will burn the outfit and be a nudist, I suppose. This is horrible.
This is horrible. So just then, as you're going over to the tables, this detective walks out from the back, and he looks like he's probably just recently been ill.
Oh, okay.
He's a very attractive man who's probably 6 foot tall with brown hair that's kind of slicked back, and he's got on a full suit and everything. Nice.
Can I just ask, how are the mutton chops?
They're,
I love a good chop.
They're pretty choppy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not like English general choppy,
yeah,
but
okay.
they're there, right? So, you know.
He's a keeper.
They're not like the general's chops, but they're there.
James, the tea, I'm quite thirsty.
So you must be
Dr. Powell.
Oh, Dr. Powell.
So pleased to make your acquaintance.
It's
and
nice
she doesn't
to meet
want
you.
To like offer her hand. She is not a huge fan of touching.
Usually I don't have a I'm sorry. I was taken ill by what we have to deal with here. Oh. I usually don't have a problem, but for some reason the atmosphere caused my constitution to take a bit of a dip.
Oh, I understand completely.
You just arrived, Dr. Graves hasn't said anything to you about what's going on?
No, I believe he was waiting for you for the grand reveal.
Oh, okay. Well, we believe we may have a serial murderer on our hands.
Oh, no.
And you can tell that Graves does not agree with where this is going.
Okay.
But isn't saying anything. He kind of, there's something in his eyes that you kind of pick up on.
Nice.
That like, ugh.
And I think at this point, Lisette has like folded her arms and mm-hmm. she's like slowly pushing her glasses up on her face and trying to like, she's taken enough of a step back and away from the two of them in order to desert, like to sort of observe them both as,
right.
The constable is speaking.
Right.
She's trying to like, all right.
Right.
We'll analyze everything that's being said. And just as important as the words are like the like body language that's being delivered.
Absolutely. Hmm. He goes, I've been investigating this group. They're called the Royal London Spiritual Society.
Hmm.
They're another one of these groups of ladies that get together and try to speak with ghosts and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, the ladies who seance quite well.
Yes. well, there's one in particular that has a group of four women that keeps creating corpses everywhere they go, and I've been tracking them for the last year and a half, unbeknownst to them.
My word.
And I need someone who is educated, with a medical background, who could possibly join their group and report back what they find.
That sounds amazing. I just can't imagine a world in which Harold would agree to that. He's not much of a talker,
no,
you see.
No, see, I need a...
Yes, I understand.
Okay, good.
Good.
Anyway, yes. So I wanted to show you why this is so important. These are people that have been affected. Two of them are not here because unfortunately they were buried and it happened a while ago, so they really don't help us with the situation.
Absolutely.
The first corpse that we have over here is of a young man named Tommy.
Tommy?
Yes, he worked as a footman at Lord Tillis's house. He was seen a lot with one of the members. Her name was Maggie Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Graves kind of gives this weird look.
Mm-hmm.
And he lifts the sheet off of Tommy. And the back of Tommy's head is blown out. And the front of Tommy's head is blown out. Like, literally, it's like a canoe.
Oh, my gosh.
He goes, yes, it's hard to look at. But we found Tommy several blocks away from his home where he was working. And when we talked with the other servants, they had seen Tommy with this Maggie Cooper mm-hmm. and another one of her associates, Alizé Carew. So that's the first one.
Okay. And I think the moment the corpse is revealed, she like kind of scopes the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then like propriety and all of her breeding have dictated that she like clutch her pearls and jump away. And then that like intense educational medical curiosity overtakes her and like without even thinking, she's like reaching into like the pockets of her pinafore and like tying it loose. She's made like a silk scarf into a sort of like mask when she knows things are going to smell badly. It's
right.
heavily scented with like peppermint oil.
Right.
Just because Harold, this isn't the first time she and Harold have like looked at corpses, and she ties it around her head immediately and is going to go in for like a closer look.
Right. So give me just a medicine roll. You want to use your percentage die and just roll against your percentage that you have, just a straight up roll.
So I have 70 written there.
Okay.
So hopefully it should be good. And I rolled a 78.
Okay.
Did I do okay? I think I rolled too high.
You rolled too high.
Yep.
So basically, I'm going to say, because you have a little extra time, you clearly see that it's a gunshot wound, mm-hmm. that it was close up. You can't really tell at what angle it happened.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Gotcha.
So you just barely missed it. If you took a little bit more time, mm-hmm. but you're listening to him or whatever.
Yeah. She's just sort of...
Yeah.
I think she went, ooh, some sort of gunshot, and like didn't overthink it, and is sort of just inspecting the rest of him while also being distracted by like listening to the story, while also being distracted by trying to like think about Harold's reaction to all of this. So she's not inspecting it very closely.
Yeah, no problem. He goes, this is the most recent corpse that we have from this group that we've been following. There's also Lord and Lady Tillis that I spoke of. They're both missing at this point. And another woman, Kate Plum, who was part of the original seance group.
Yes.
They broke apart from these four. And the four have, as I said, been kind of creating these bodies. Or at least I think they are, but I don't have enough proof.
Okay.
Anyway, he goes to the next thing, and he pulls the thing off, and it's this, it looks like a dock worker. You've seen the outfit before.
Yeah.
He's got, his whole chest is ripped open, and he's got no heart. Like his insides have been ripped out, and it looks like an animal has ripped him apart.
Oh my gosh.
So like, this is, yes.
Oh, my sainted aunt.
We found this poor fellow in an alleyway, and we were told by several witnesses that, again, it was Maggie Cooper and Alizé Carew and another woman, Eugenia Pinbottom. I don't know if the fourth woman was there.
Excuse me. Unless these four ladies are in fact some sort of, like, land-faring sharks, how could they have done this?
We don't... That's the thing. That's why I'm asking you as a professional. We keep finding these grotesque scenes.
Yes.
And we need more information. It doesn't make any sense that a woman would rip apart a person like this. And there's no connection between this corpse. There's a connection with Tommy, but not with this person. But they were in the area, and they were seen right before the body was found.
My lord.
So it's a very valid question. Mm. That's why we need you. We need somebody that can gain their trust and maybe get just enough information that we can find out what's going on, especially when it comes to Lord and Lady Tillis being missing.
Yes. You would like to find them before they become...
whatever this is.
Yes, another example of this savagery.
Right. And he takes you to the third body.
Mm-hmm.
And he lifts the sheet up. And it's this woman. She looks like she's... okay, so everyone back then looked older.
Yeah.
Than they do now. So we have lotion.
That one got me.
Yeah.
Damn. The invention of germs and lotion.
The invention of lotion. You know, but if you had to guess, she's probably 45.
Okay.
But she's definitely led a hard life.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, this woman, from what we are told, her name is Fran. She was a prostitute in the East End.
Ugh, unfortunate.
And she used to work with, again, Maggie Cooper. So we have three people all associated with the women.
Yes.
Now, here's the unfortunate part. Miss Cooper has left England. I don't know why, but she headed across the channel and has basically disappeared. But the other three are still here.
Okay.
So I was... hoping that maybe you could look over these bodies, take whatever notes you can, find out what you can, and then we could pay a call on them, maybe befriend one of them. Alizé Carew is probably going to be the easiest one. She's a shopkeeper.
Okay.
And she isn't married yet.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean or imply.
Well, I mean, at some point, women feel an urge for marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's so good.
The Crave's just like, like takes his tea and walks the other way.
Yes, good.
But anyway.
Thank you for explaining to me the biological urges of women. My education until this point was incomplete.
I understand. It's hard to understand all these things.
Oh, my goodness. What would I do without you?
Yeah.
Continue.
Anyway, if you could somehow insinuate yourself into the group and ask some questions, any information you could get would be so helpful. She spends, her name of her shop is Curiosity and I'm forgetting and I have to look at my notes. Curious and Curiosities.
That's clever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is this something you could do for us? You'll be paid, of course.
Oh, I naturally assumed we were going to be discussing my retainer at some point, but...
Yes.
I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't say that I was horrified by what I'm seeing here.
It's pretty bad, and we do suggest that you get in and get out as quickly as possible.
Oh, absolutely.
Find out what information you can. If what I think is correct, they're quite dangerous, and you don't want to get in their wake, as it were.
Absolutely.
Their leader, it goes, in my opinion, it switches back and forth between the American Ethel, who has been in Bedlam before.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
She...
How very American of
her. She couldn't keep it together for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a widow. I started by watching her after the death of Rose. Rose was a young lady that was a part of the seance club or whatever.
Okay.
And she died while she was at Ethel's house. And so now we have literally six bodies that are connected to these people. So be careful and, you know, try not to stir them up, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, you know how easy women are to stir up.
Absolutely.
Well, let it be said that your willingness to allow me to throw myself into the heart of danger is quite forward thinking, despite everything else you've said today. So
quite right. Just
yep. Oh, she adores him at this point. This little monster. You can count on my services.
Thank you.
I will find out whatever I can.
You can find me, of course, at Scotland Yard.
Absolutely.
If you need anything, just please let me know. And good luck to you. I know you'll want to look over these bodies.
Yes. Thank you.
So he heads out after doing a dip and whatever.
Yep.
And Graves comes over and goes, you were very restrained there. I'm quite impressed with that. I'm sure you deal with it on a daily basis.
No, never that bad. Never to that extent. No.
The more money someone has, the more oblivious they are to what they're saying.
Exactly. But more importantly than whatever he was blathering on about, you seemed highly incredulous.
I know the women he's speaking of.
Oh.
And I do not think they're serial killers. I think that they're dealing with something that I don't understand.
You mean like basic hygiene and cleanliness?
No, touche. Yes, and I will say that James has been trying very hard to clean my instruments properly.
You need to give that poor boy a break. He will never become a mortician of any caliber.
Are you kidding? He's already starting to get a good crook in his spine. Everything is going as planned.
Oh my, you know how... And she just sort of stamps her foot and slips on some gore.
Excuse me, I'm just gonna go use the restroom real quick. I'll be right back. And he walks away and leaves you there with these corpses.
Perfect.
And you notice that the last corpse, Fran's corpse, you notice something moving inside her.
Oh, yeah.
And as Graves is about to leave, he says, oh, don't worry about that. It's probably a rat that ate its way in and doesn't know how to get out. We'll deal with it in a second. And he leaves.
You are truly a tragedy walking. And,
oh, she's dead. She doesn't care.
And she, like, hikes her skirts up again and is going to go proceed over to Fran's body.
All right.
And I think her particular quirk with any sort of surgery is that she speaks to herself. Like, she rubber ducks to no one.
Right.
And it's just, good morning, Fran. It's the evening. There's no light down here. My apologies. Let's try that again. Good evening, Fran. I'm very, very sorry that this has happened to you. I'm Dr. Pell. And she just starts, like, giving this little rant that she uses for, like, bedside manner as she, like, pulls out, like, some sort of general, like, pokey instruments to, like, inspect the body.
All right. So when you say pokey instruments, do you cut the skin? Do you
not yet
avoid where it's this thing that's moving around is in the like the stomach region?
Yeah. So I think she's going to start. She's going to give her tummy time wide berth for now.
Okay.
And she's going to start up at the head. And this is more of just like, once again, she doesn't like touching. So she actually has these like custom long like stainless steel implements that she just sort of like manipulates the body with. So she's kind of like turning it on its side and like messing with the eyes and just, let's call them like very long chopsticks. And then she's like at a distance.
Like silver, like steel, stainless steel chopsticks. Okay, so the first thing that you notice when you're looking at her head, you check her eyes, which is something that you always do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times older people have like cataracts or milky eye or whatever. But in the center of her eye, both of them, is this strange blue glow that doesn't really make sense. It's just, it's almost like a neon kind of look in it.
Okay.
And that's the first thing you note is the fact that there's some kind of something going on in her eye.
That is uncanny bioluminescence. I don't know where to place that. You have beautiful eyes. I will shut them and come back to that in a bit. Perhaps some sort of like, they eat eel pies, I believe, on the docks, and maybe some sort of electric eel. That's nonsense. This is nonsense. And then she kind of goes down farther down the body and like opens the mouth.
Okay. You open the mouth and you hear the sound of just a really soft whisper of Dr.
Oh, she shut, like slams the mouth shut.
Can you give me a sand check?
I would love to.
So you're rolling against your sanity, which I believe is up there.
Yes. Good, 31.
You're perfect, you're fine.
Oh, so yes. You're like, no. I don't want to slam it inadvertently a little too hard. No, she like slams the mandible up and like maybe like breaks a tooth a little bit. Just like, whoop. No, none of that.
Okay.
Fran, I'm going to need you to get yourself together. You know what? No, it's me. I've had a long day.
You hear the thunk just a few tables down.
James?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Are you in the... You're not... That wasn't from in the room, was it?
No.
Oh.
You need something.
Oh. And I think she's conflicted now. Like, she would like to call for backup, but she's also a little freaked out and doesn't want anyone to see her that way.
Right.
And I think her sense of propriety is going to overwhelm, you know, good common sense. She goes, no, save my tea in the other room. I'll be done shortly.
Okay.
Oh, stars and garters, what? If there's anyone else in the room that I can't see, I'm going to need you to wait your turn. Oh, let's keep going. Maybe it's sound displacement, echo room. Let's go for whatever is happening in the torso right now.
Okay, so the moving thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, there's this, like, lump that is moving in erratic ways, just kind of in the stomach area, just underneath the skin.
Oh, okay. Amongst his sundry disgust, utterly disgusting tools. Can I get an item as close to a meat mallet as I can find?
Oh, absolutely. He's got like a total, like, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to grab that little boy. And she pulls out one of her surgical rags from earlier, which is covered in blood.
Right.
And yet
still clean.
Cleaner.
Yes.
Than her putting her hand on that. And she wraps it around her, like, still leather gloved hand, and then grabs the handle and comes over and just smacks the top of it.
Okay, so when you smack the top of it, it's like hitting a huge thing of jello. Oh. The entire body ripples all the way through. And the mouth opens again, and these maggots and worms start to crawl out of her mouth. And her fingernails and her fingers kind of split, and maggots and worms start coming out of it.
Oh, my God. She is horrified, and I think she dry retches into her scarf.
Right.
But she's, like, you see her, like, her whole, like, body, like, sags a bit. She's relieved that, like, there's a clear, natural explanation. Like,
right.
Maybe the sound of maggots mushing against each other sounds like a whisper.
Right.
And perhaps somehow, like, that's the reason for the glow. And she, like, calms down a bit and is going to go, oh, that makes much more sense. And she's going to go over and, like, actually, no, she'll pull a scalpel out from her bag, kind of wipes it off in her pinafore and is like, well, let's out everybody out.
Just do the torso cut all the way down the center.
Yep, the Y torso cut.
So as you're cutting in, the torso splits open.
Oh, my.
And it's just a pile, like, the only thing human on her is her skin.
Whoa.
Everything else is maggots and worms intertwined, moving around.
Oh, my goodness.
There are no bones. There's no blood. Mm-hmm. No, she's completely this crawling mass of grossness.
And I think just generally, she's just continuing her outward narrative, because that's like her calming process of heretofore never seen level of decay, preserved.
Right.
Like, somehow they were able to consume all inner tissues save for the epidermis.
So let's definitely do a, because this is doesn't seem quite natural.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's do a sanity
check. Oh, definitely. Uh-oh. 97?
Oh, so...
Wait, you didn't tell me at the beginning that I'm supposed to roll low.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's on you.
It is on me.
I was supposed to tell the dice, and I didn't know to tell the
dice.
Do
you want to re-roll? Because I didn't tell you.
No. No, this is fine.
Okay.
Let's take the problem.
All right, so you take 4 points. Now, just so you know, with sand loss, up to 4, it means that you're like stunned and, like, just kind of shaky.
Yeah.
Anything over 4, it can be a phobia or a, you know, like, fear of blood, fear of whatever.
Yeah.
Something bad happens.
Nice.
So you take 4 off of your san.
Yep.
I think it's right up there. Yeah.
We're down to a 61.
Awesome. Okay. So yeah, this kind of shakes you. And right at that moment, Dr. Graves comes in and goes, dear God, what is this? And let's see how he does by seeing all this mass of grossness.
And as you roll, I think her problem was she definitely thought she was doing that running narrative to calm herself down, but, like, that was entirely in her own head, and she has just been, like, stuck in that, like, blue screen of death, just staring at this.
Right.
Horrifying.
So he, too, becomes quite shooken by this, and he calls in James. He says, all right, we need to clean this up. Get a few as a sample, and we're going to push the rest down the grate and just look at her skin. Uh-huh. And so they start just, like, taking, like, brooms, like shop brooms, and just shove the maggots and the worms off the table. And then they, like, take a bucket of, like, dirty water, wash them down into the thing.
That's so good
and
awful.
The whole thing is just like, you're just like, I'm not eating ever again.
Nope. I think she's just sort of like braced against a wall. And for someone who, like, deeply hates touching all surfaces anytime, I think she's kind of got her forehead against, like, the cool tile wall and is just comforted. Like, oh my God, just cool down. Just immediately overclocked and stressed out. And
right.
Just sort of letting them do that while she tries to, like, scramble for, like, I have to have studied something for that to make sense. because if that's what I don't know how to explain that. That was wild.
Yeah. So after a few horrific moments, you finally get your composure back. Mm-hmm. You see Dr. Graves looking down at the inside of the skin, because all that's left is this skin suit. Mm-hmm. And he says, Dr. Powell, would you please come here?
Yes, of course. And she pushes her glasses back up and walks over.
In very well done penmanship, on the inside where her back would be, it says, Ethel, I'm coming for you.
Oh, no.
No. And it's written out somehow and put into her skin. I don't know. And you guys hear a thunk again.
Oh, you heard it too.
Yes, I heard it too. That was, you know, I think that when you go and talk with these people, as I said, I know, like, I knew Maggie Cooper before she moved, and she wasn't a killer. You can tell. She was a good person, and I don't think the rest, I mean, Miss Pinbottom is from a very, very well-known family, and she's very, very much the kind of upper crust lady, if you would. Mm-hmm. And I would say I don't know Ethel very well. I've only heard about her, but this is, I don't know how you would get writing on the inside of a, unless they took out every single bone, everything. Did you see perchance any like sewing marks where they had maybe shoved all these maggots in?
You know, I would have noted that immediately.
Yes. I don't know how they did this. Somebody took out every single thing, but how would they leave no mark?
Harold, you're sort of losing the forest for the trees here. My question is, who would use a human corpse to send a message?
Do you want to know the answer to that question? I don't know if I do.
I know I don't.
Well.
Oh, my goodness.
We can't let the people at Scotland Yard know about this until we have some facts. Oh. They'll throw us in bedlam.
They would.
Well, look, we're not gonna... We know what happened to the other two. He's got a gunshot, and if you take a closer look at him, you're able to figure out that someone shot him point blank in the back of the head. And the other guy, you see these, like, really horrible knife marks on bone. Like, a lot of times when a knife hits bone, it chips and all that crap. And so that's what you see. Someone with a lot of strength and frenzy went after this guy's heart.
Absolutely.
So those are what you learn from them, but those are things that are very...
Explainable. Understand, like grotesque, but...
Yeah. But
natural.
Fran is not.
Yeah.
So he goes, as I said, maybe the best course of action is for you to speak with them. I wouldn't mention this to them either unless you feel the time is right. Yeah, I know. I know this might sound like a strange thing to do, but I would like your help to secure the bodies to the table until I have them picked up tomorrow. I just don't want them
to
disappear.
You don't have to explain.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. I feel as though I understand.
All right, all these weird noises I've never heard before. I just want to make sure they don't get up and walk away.
And she just sort of like smiles wanly.
Yes.
And helps secure the bodies down. Do I have a sense of which, like what area in the room or which corpse was making the thud sound?
When you look at Tommy... Mm-hmm. His body was kind of looking as if it was looking towards the roof. Mm-hmm. when you turn around, it looks like his head has turned and where his eye, he was watching you.
Okay. No, I do hate that. Tommy, my sweet boy, eyes in one place.
Yes.
And she's going to with Harold near her to embolden her, she's going to come over and literally snap the neck back up.
Okay. So yeah, you do that. And the lab is underneath the ground. And so there's this little window with these bars mm-hmm. at the top. And there's a little bit of lamplight coming through there.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you're snapping, you hear that thud again and you look up towards the window and there are two children with mice masks on looking in the window. When you look up, you hear them just giggle just a little bit and they run away.
Harold, never let it be said that London is a land of it's a nightmare. This is a nightmare place.
Look, I think James should walk you home. I know that you are quite a capable person, but maybe two people would be better than one.
I honestly wouldn't hate it.
Okay.
Don't tell anyone.
Well, of course not.
Thank you. Oh, I will take that tea before we go, though.
Here's the tea. And Detective Wilcox left the address of the ladies for you. You can, as I said, I think because Ethel is the one that is spoken of in this communique we have here, you may want to start with her, but it's up to you. They're all interesting people.
I look forward to making their acquaintance. Oh, my. If I die doing this, mm-hmm. as a final gift, you will clean this place and yourself up. I will not be handled here by you like this.
I promise I will order a steel table that is completely clean just for you.
Thank you.
But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Oh, all we can do is hope.
Yes. Whew. Anyway, have a good evening. So you guys...
You too.
You know, you drink your tea
Eat
and you
some,
cut out.
Eat some meat, I think. Meat.
Yeah, I'll try to get something down after the...
Oh, no, not tonight.
Yes.
Tonight, just...
Bourbon.
You're not wrong.
Gin.
If the Americans got one thing right, it was bourbon.
It was bourbon, yeah.
Yes.
And we don't like to admit it, but yes. So you make it back home to where Martin is.
Yes, my darling Martin.
Your darling Martin. You live in a... really kind of nice apartment loft.
Yeah.
It's not very close to the Thames.
Yeah.
So luckily you're not getting that Thames-like smell that happens during this time period.
Mm-hmm.
And he's writing, just kind of really focused on what he's doing. And
nice.
He's got several pages around him.
Nice. Can I describe the scene that
sure,
I come
go ahead.
On.
Go ahead.
Cool.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. So we open into the loft and she immediately just begins. Lisette is incredibly proper and prim outwardly. And part of it is a factor of her new understanding of germs and her subsequent horror at the prospect of them. But also, yeah, she's trying to be presentable. But the moment she comes inside, she's just shedding clothing and the pinafore comes down and there's a line of her clothes that she'll come back and grab in a bit. But by the time she reaches main dress components, there's a large, very comfy robe that she changes into and continues the walk in a straight line up to Martin, who's this very tall, kind of ruddy ginger, 100,000 freckles.
Right.
Too tall for the workbench that he's at, just furiously writing, probably adorably splattered with ink.
Mm-hmm.
And she immediately wraps herself around him.
Ach, darling, it's good you're home. I'm trying this new thing from Paris. It's called absinthe. It's really good.
Oh my.
So anyway, how was your day?
I cannot imagine a day I would love to talk less about. It was pretty good. The normal amount of someone fell and split a thing and cut a thing and lots of putting people back together. And then just the most upsetting end to a day at, Dr. Graves.
Yes, I do. How is he?
Disgusting, but devoted to his work.
I understand that. So I was thinking, I've been writing all day about this this love scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a little while since we've bothered the neighbors. And so he turns around and he picks you up and he takes you over to, you guys have this little piano.
Yeah.
And it's open.
Oh.
And he puts you on the piano. Yeah. There's this big noise. He goes, let them hear us. And that's where we're going to end.
Nice. I'm going to say, though, she was holding his absinthe at the
okay.
time, too. Like,
okay.
They're very bohemian. It's very
yeah.
cute.
And that's what, yeah. yeah.
Perfect.
Awesome. So that's where we're going to end it.
Nice.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. She's so nice and has so much to lose and is gonna. Oh, I'm so already like delightfully creeped out. I feel like I'm a person with a strong constitution and you've already like, oh, Wes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. You monster.
You monster. Yeah. It's, I have a lot of fun. It's Terry's always so funny. She's like, shut it. Like, she hates little like hands.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Stuff, and she's yeah. She's like, oh my God, it's just disgusting. Like, I have a lot of time.
Oh my God. That's the most horrifying way to describe that.
I have a lot of time on my hands.
On your tiny hands.
On your tiny hands. So I had a lot of fun. Thank you very
so much.
I know that you are everywhere. Tell yes. everybody where you are.
Happily, I am most happy to be here. Thank you again. I've been having such a good time. Check out our other APs too. But if you like, live in studio RPG streaming, you can catch me on Sundays at Saving Throw Show, where I'm playing Demigods, a game you probably recognize by or upcoming or
yeah,
I don't know how
it's February.
Yeah, right.
So that'll be in the past when this comes out.
Oh, okay, perfect. Woo-hoo. So you are already aware of what that is. Yeah, playing New Pantheon, which is a Demigods actual play. On Mondays, you can catch me on Kolok 1991, which is a Kids on Bikes actual play on Hyper RPG.
So many studios.
It's like three and I can't keep them straight because I'm a goblin. On Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific, you can catch me running a fifth edition homebrew game of Dungeons and Dragons called Pirates of Salt Bay.
Awesome.
Which is super good on Saving Throw Show. And on Wednesdays, you can catch me at Happy Jack's RPG playing Masks. It's a game called Eidolon Academy that's super fun and good. And yeah, that's it.
That's awesome. That's it. That's all I'm doing. Plus, I'm building a car. And next week, I'm going to figure out fusion.
Yeah,
so,
you know, just like...
Just a little stuff.
A girl has to have her hobbies.
You got to have hobbies.
That's what we do when we have all that energy that's not spent on babies. Oh, Wilcox.
Yeah, it's funny because Wilcox is totally like the British, like, just...
Right? I think the best part of that is it's like so well-meaning too.
Yeah.
That I think it's just like, oh, you.
And that can be the worst.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you like the person, but they're also tools.
Yeah. Like, you're terrible.
Yeah.
But like, bless your heart.
You have just enough likability that I can almost stomach your douchiness. So I am Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games. We make all the different sound effects for your tabletop games. You can find us on DriveThruRPG or on BattleBards. You can find us on 12 Sided Stories. That's 12 the number, then Sided Stories. That's on Twitter and then also on Instagram. I keep doing hand motions because I talk with my hands.
It's no, same. You're good.
And so that's it. Thank you. So, like I said, thank you so much to our Patreon backers. And also, if you have a second, leave us a review or a shout out. Anything you can do is helpful. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time with the full crew.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to go to the squad.
All right. See you later. Bye.
Bye.